A visit, as we always do on a Friday, with Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Tons to get into. And Ben, always good to hear your voice. How are we doing?
Happy Friday, Dan. I'm doing well, man. How are you? Are you you're a hockey guy now, huh?
Well, every once in a while, I pop in there. You know, it's you know, if they need a little help, I'm here. You know, if they need me, that's just the way that's how I roll.
You dabble. I love it. It's fun to see you on there. I think you're maybe having a little too much fun with Bernard, as you like to call him.
Bernard's the best. You know, he was in my wedding. I don't know if you knew that. Bernard
I did not know that.
Yeah, Bernard is one of my best friends in the world, and his great family and Bernadette, they're just awesome people. And you get to be around certain people and Hall of Famers. For instance, yesterday I did an event for the Cardinals, and I was around Ted Simmons. And you just don't find many guys that have had those kinds of careers that are as down to earth as they are, and as easygoing, just kind of, you know, normal guys. So I said to Ted, I said, you know, you walk downtown every day. What's it like when you walk by your own statue? He's like, man, it's pretty cool. I got to tell you. He said, I checked the top of it to make sure it's still clean. I said, well, I get that. You know, maybe there's a few birds that didn't like you, but whatever. You know, they're just normal guys, which makes it fun, and makes those guys living in St. Louis makes it fun too.
I like the image of Simba checking the hair of his statue. That's a good image there. No, dude, Ted Simmons when he was scouting still, he would roll into the press box, like with his laptop in a case, and like ride the elevator, like go through like the media room. Like you just think he was just a scout. And it's like, no, that's Hall of Famer Ted Simmons just hanging out.
Just hanging out. No big deal. Yeah.
Good to be around him. Glad that he's around here in St. Louis. We're blessed, man. But hey, how about a future former Hall of Famer maybe coming to St. Louis?
I want to get
Are
into
you with
this.
Me on that?
So you wrote in today's Post-Dispatch about bringing Max Scherzer to St. Louis. And tell us the premise for those that have not read it or will read it this morning, but the premise of what you're looking at with your article.
Well, I agree with the Cardinals when they're talking about, hey, we got to fix this pitching. I do think that, you know, understandably, a lot of fans are kind of clamoring for a shortstop. And I get it. It's the offseason of shortstop, and the Cardinals have a question mark there. So if they're not going to go dive into that shortstop pool, which has all kinds of options, then I think they really need to actually, you know, buckle down and drill down on helping this staff. And it's hard to think of a better pitcher for this team than Max Scherzer. I love what Marcus Stroman has, what he could bring to this team, the ground ball and all that, the ground ball rate and all that stuff. He would be a good fit. But no offense to Stroman, Max Scherzer is the pitcher that Cardinal Nation feels like got away too many times, Dan. I mean, drafted by the Cardinals initially out of high school, of course, goes on to be a Mizzou Hall of Famer. The Cardinals, very rarely do they do this, Dan, on the record, have said, yeah, we wish we would have been more active in the market for him before he signed a long-term big money deal in Washington that he was worth every penny of. And here comes this next chance. And yeah, he's old. You know, he's 37. And yeah, he had some dead arm issues last year, in part because the Dodgers wanted to use him as a reliever for reasons I couldn't quite understand. But he's still Max freaking Scherzer. And he doesn't miss games. He doesn't miss seasons. He is going to be a Hall of Famer. He's really good against the National League Central. He's really good at Busch Stadium in a pitcher-friendly ballpark. They need more guarantee. They need more proven guys. And there's just not somebody who checks those boxes like Max Scherzer, on top of selling tickets and everybody wanting to see him in a Cardinals uniform for years.
Well, he's going to want a guarantee of a lot of money. So how much do you think it would cost?
Well, it's not my money, Dan.
I understand that. So I'm just curious what you think it might cost to bring him to any of these teams, years and dollars.
Yeah, well, 2 years, we've seen projections of that 2 year, $70 million. He's going to make a lot of on the AAV, right? Maybe 3 years, $100 million. And I get it, 37, that's risky. It is, especially for a guy whose arm wasn't feeling great at the end of last year. But when you look at his injury history, Dan, it's all minor stuff. He's not missed a season since he debuted. He knows his body. He didn't end his run with the Dodgers with an injury. He ended it with his arm not being in the shape where he felt like he could go out and have max effort, and he communicated that. So I don't have real questions about him just falling off a cliff. Now, maybe he won't be at his complete best as he enters, you know, 38, 39, 40. He probably won't be. But I think the risk factor for that with the Cardinals is maybe lower than it would be with some other teams. Pitcher-friendly ballpark. And also, they've got a proven track record here of guys who have had proven success coming and kind of freezing time or even turning it back. Hap, Lester, most importantly, Adam Wainwright. There's something about being in St. Louis in that ballpark with the way it plays, the defense behind it. And also, I think a big part of this is throwing to Yadier Molina, who's going to be around at least one more year. I think it does. It seems to bode well for guys who have been there and done that, who everybody else might think might be a little long in the tooth.
It is interesting, you know, the direction that they go. I personally believe that they need to go pitching after what I saw at the end of last season, that if you had folks that threw strikes, you had a pretty good chance to win. Now, if that's Max Scherzer, hey, I'm excited with it. I just think the cost could be very prohibitive to maybe to what they're doing. But if it's on a short term and you do have some pitching coming and you're not sure about Jack Flaherty, you know, you go for it too. It's Yadi's final year. You're in the primes of the career of Paul Goldschmidt, Nolan Arenado. So it does make some sense to maybe do this.
And I think you also have to factor in, and I've made this same case for Bryce Harper, who just won National League MVP and deservingly so. You do consider, I would at least, the other factors in play. There's going to be a real interest in watching Max Scherzer pitch in a Cardinals uniform. That's going to sell tickets. You're going to have people lining up at the gates for Max Scherzer bobblehead day. This is a player that is beloved here, despite not playing for the Cardinals. A Chesterfield native, played and starred at Mizzou. I mean, there's a real draw factor there that you have a chance to tap into. Dan, paying a lot of money, absolutely, but not like you would have had to pay him when he was, you know, on that massive deal with the Nationals. Not like you would have to pay a Corey Seager to pluck him up the top of the free agent shortstop market. Not like you'd have to pay a younger star pitcher who is, you know, wanting a 10-year plus contract. So I think Scherzer knows that the money's going to be made, but it's going to be made in a shorter amount of time. And really, you know, if he can pitch like he has the past couple seasons on a 2-3 year deal, then I think most teams would see that as being very valuable performance. I was more impressed than scared by the way he pitched last season. I mean, he was just a finalist for the Cy Young Award. I don't know. I mean, I'm curious what you think. I don't make too much out of the fact the way his arm kind of got burnt out on him there at the end. They were using him in ways that were unique to him. And I would imagine if given a chance to do it over again, the Dodgers would not have done that with him and would have just let him make starts in the postseason instead of getting too cute with things. I don't worry too much about the way that worked out.
Yeah. I you know, he could be one of those guys. It's just an outlier. He's 37. There's a ton of mileage on the body, the shoulder, the arm, the elbow. I get it, but you know what? He's just one of those freaks of nature. And there's a handful of guys over the years that have been like that. And he very well could be that guy. Now, at some point, Father Time catches up with everybody. He's undefeated. But he's 37. And the interest, I'll say this. If you brought him to St. Louis, I 100% agree with you. The interest level of the Cardinals, while already high, gets really high every fifth day that he's on the mound. Or when Waino's pitching in his final year, the second right. half of next year with Yadier Molina. Is he, you know, knock on wood, is healthy and finishing up a Hall of Fame career? It just could be another footnote, a major one, to what could be a very special season here in St. Louis.
Tell you what, can you imagine the competitive juices that would be flowing between Adam Wainwright and Max Scherzer?
Well, I think that's part of why you bring him in, too. And clearly, if you're going to pay that kind of money, you're paying him to perform on the mound. But his between starts are legendary, and how he prepares himself and what he does in the film room and looking at the numbers and the various things that he does. There is no other option but to have that rub off on other young players. Now, I'm not saying that the Cardinals don't have that with Wainwright and others, because they do. But it's just another one that you'd get. And, oh, by the way, this guy's headed to Cooperstown. So it would be fascinating. Is there anybody else out there outside of Scherzer that you like that could maybe be a fit? I like Stroman, and I like Steven Matz. I'm just looking for guys that throw strikes and put the ball on the ground, because with that defense behind you, you're going to win a lot of games.
Yes, Stroman, the profile is right there. It fits, and you can imagine. You know, it's funny. It is funny to look back and go, really what they're looking for, Dan, is kind of similar to what they looked for when they got Mike Leake.
No question.
You remember how that didn't work out? Well, why didn't it work out? Well, Leake and Yachty didn't exactly become best friends right away. But the bigger reason was that Leake was a ground ball pitcher, and he had a ragged defense, and he was frustrated. You know, he got there, he was brought there, and the Cardinals did not have a defense that played well behind him. And a lot of the numbers that got, you know, inflated on him very quickly were kind of, it was just a bad fit. Now, if not that they're going to go get Mike Leake, but if they were to reverse time and bring Mike Leake into this defense, I think he would have much better numbers and probably be a much better fit. They're kind of looking for that guy. A lot of strikes, no walks, bunch of ground balls or fly balls that don't get out of the ballpark. The one thing this defense can't defend, home runs. So you don't want a guy who gives up a bunch of those. I think Stroman is right there. I do see the fit in Matthew. Even some of the minor moves the Cardinals have made, some of the lower tier guys, you're starting to see that profile of what they want. There's the kid in Oakland too that's kind of interesting. It would be a trade scenario, and I almost am reluctant to mention that, A, because I can hardly ever remember the kid's name, but B, because I don't think the Cardinals are going to want to trade the guys that it takes to get those top level type starters. But if you just do a search, the kid's name pops up on, and I'm blanking on his name. He threw a complete game this year, Dan, the kid in Oakland, the lefty.
You talking about Manaea?
Yes. If they deal him, it would cost his fortune. But that's the kind of profile that really is intriguing. He's left-handed too. There's a ton of strikes, gets a lot of ground balls. And he's like 28, I think. So that would be a name that jumps out. But you're not going to get that guy without giving up your Nolan Gorman or your Matthew Liberatore. And I can't imagine the Cardinals want to deal from the top of their deck.
You know, what's interesting is that we're only a couple of weeks away from what could be a lockdown with the sport. And yet we are talking free agency, which is a good thing. Keeps it on the front burner. I think one of the things they have to get clear for National League teams and for potential DHs is, where are you in the DH? So that some of these NL teams, if we're going to have a universal DH, can start really figuring out the profile of their lineups and who they want.
Yeah, I assume that they're all assuming they're going to have it, and that seems to be what they're all saying. But yeah, you know what they say about assumptions. I do think that both sides seem to think that if they're going to play in 2022, and we all hope that that is the case, a full season, whether it's a 162 or slightly shortened due to an expanded postseason, we will see. But I do, everything I've heard says that's feel like the DH is coming. But until that's official, Dan, you're totally right. You lack some clarity there. The Cardinals do seem interested in using that spot to try to get some opportunities for some of these young hitters. I mean, Juan Yepes hits a home run every 3 seconds in Arizona. And Lars Nootbaar could fit in there. You also have it being a way for Nolan Gorman to kind of ease his way into the majors. I mean, he's still getting some seasoning at second base. So if the Cardinals go internal there, if they do decide to, you know, see what they have at shortstop internally and give another shot to Paul DeJong and try to do maybe a timeshare situation there between four guys, Edmund, Gorman, DeJong, and Sosa, then it just gets back to our starting point where, okay, that's fine, but you better then go and make sure you have the kind of pitching that keeps the game scores low, that takes advantage of this defense. Because if you're going to let things ride on the offense and not add that proven DH and not add that shortstop, then you better use your resources on pitching, or else you're going to have a hard time being up to snuff with the one other team in this division, Dan, that's going for it. The Brewers are not going to just fade away here. They've been really good over the past 5 years. They might trade a guy. They might trade a Hader, but it doesn't mean they're just going to lay up. They're gonna continue to compete, and they're interested, like the Cardinals, in sticking around and being good every year. So this is a real interesting season, and I hope it's a full one, because that Brewers-Cardinals rivalry, which kind of gets overlooked at times, I think it's really going to come into focus here. I just hope it's for a full season, even if we have to have a shortened spring training.
Where are you at right now with the settlement potentially with the Rams and the city of St. Louis? What's the next step? You and Randy Carricker have done a phenomenal job reporting on this, going to the courtrooms, connected with people. What's the next thing that you think fans could be hearing about?
Well, I'm disappointed. The NFL has not been leaking me any stories like it keeps doing to other people. So I don't know why.
I can tell you this. Don't expect a Christmas card either.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. The latest report is interesting, and it's more infighting between the league. This is from the Business Journal. What jumped out to me, and I think this is true. I usually tell you what I think is baloney, what I think is legit. I do think there's going to be a meeting of the minds next week about a revisitation of a settlement offer. So we'll see if that number gets bigger. The reporting that came out this week said that Stan Kroenke has told the other owners that he feels like this thing can be settled for somewhere between $500 and $750 million. But he wants some assurances from the league that that cost will be spread around, or else he might try to settle it on his own, and then settle his part of it on his own, and then let the other owners move forward toward a trial, basically pull the ripcord that gets him out of the case. And that can happen. That is something that is legally allowed here. Again, and I think if I didn't say this last time we talked, I screwed up, but I hope I said there's an important date coming, and it's that December 3rd hearing on whether or not these owners who have been reluctant to hand over their financial details are going to be held in contempt of court. And what that means, Dan, is if they don't check the box that Judge McGraw has demanded of them, then he could go as far as to strike their pleadings. What does that mean? It would basically mean that potentially this lawsuit could go from not what did these guys do, but what do they have to pay? So instead of proving, hey, you did this, and this is what you owe, it would basically be a lawsuit solely around what do they owe. And that's why there's real pressure to get this thing settled before that December 3rd hearing comes around. And they don't want to hand over more financial information either. So that's why things are really starting to heat up. It sounds like next week is going to be quite interesting.
I'm fascinated at what the price tag is to settle. Yeah. You know, what would they be happy with? How many cooks are in the kitchen, so to speak? And then once you get the money, you know, how are you going to utilize it? But, what is that number? $500, $750 million, no settlement, $4 billion. I mean, what is it? I'm just fascinated to know truly where they're at with that number.
Yeah, well, I wish I knew. I don't think they have a number. And if they do, no one's saying a number that's like, if we get there, it's over. Remember, the lawyers involved in this case represent the plaintiffs. The city, the county, the Dome Authority, the city and county leaders are going to have a say in whether a settlement offer is accepted or rejected. So the lawyers are just representing the plaintiffs on a decision like that. So I try not to move the goalposts here, Dan. And I go back to when this thing started and when everybody said, well, not everybody, a lot of people said, well, I don't know if this will work. This could be a bad idea. This could just be a loss of more money. I said, no, you've got to try. But I tell you what, if you would have put me on a lie detector and said, what do you think the best outcome of this would be? I think I would have said, hey, if they can get $18 million back that they spent trying to keep the team and what turned out to be a rigged process, that'd be pretty good. Well, here they are, comfortable enough to turn down $100 million, with Kroenke suggesting to his peers that maybe he can get it off the hook for $500 to $750 million. And look, this document, it leaks for a reason. Stan Kroenke wants it out there that he could be willing to offer $750 million. And he wants St. Louis to go, oh my God, that's $750 million we might not get if we don't take a settlement offer if it comes. All this is calculated. But I can tell you this, the people who will be making this decision, they seem to be on a united front. They seem to have cool heads, and they're confident in their case. Now, I do think they understand the risk of going to trial here. And the risk of going to trial is that you are subject immediately, whatever you win, to an appeal that is usually steered toward a more conservative process through the appeals. The NFL has done a lot of good for the NFL in appeals, and it likes that territory. It's its home turf. So if you get a settlement that's big enough to make you interested in, okay, we'll take this money, we'll use it for good, and you guys can fight about who pays what in your own ranks, I do think they would be open to that. 500 to me was always one that goes, man, that's going to be hard for a region to turn down. If it gets more than that, then I think I think some hard discussions will be had. If it's 750, I guess there will be people who say that's not enough, Dan, but I don't think they would have been saying that when this thing started. I really don't.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I just, you know, you've come this far, and I wonder if people are just saying, hey, we want to see these guys have to go through it, and maybe we take that risk. But, boy, $500 million, $750 million, it's a lot of cash. Okay, let's switch gears a little bit. College football this weekend, the QB situation with Mizzou, and obviously a big game against Florida this weekend.
Big game. Missouri has two chances here to get to legitimate bowl eligibility. I say legitimate because sometimes they throw a bowl game to one of those five-win teams, which should be outlawed, I think. In the speaking of law, that should be illegal. But how weird is this, Dan? Missouri's best chance maybe of getting to a bowl game is beating Florida, not Arkansas. We didn't see that coming into this SEC season. The Arkansas Razorbacks are playing tough. They have to play Alabama this weekend, which is a tall order, but they just beat LSU. They're in a good spot with Sam Pittman. They're going to be fired up to play Missouri at the end of the regular season. Barry Odom will have his defense ready to roll against his old team. But here comes Florida first in a home game before Tigers have to go on the road. And the Gators are reeling, Dan. They barely beat Samford, not Stanford, Samford. There's whispers about Dan Mullen maybe cracking under the pressure in Gainesville. They've got a couple quarterbacks. Nobody knows who's going to start for them either, mobile quarterbacks. But Missouri is kind of starting to maybe make something out of the end of its season. Now, we'll see if Eli Drinkwitz goes with Cook over Connor Bazelak. Very interesting drama last week as he pulled Bazelak at the end of the game there and put in Brady Cook. I do think he'll start one of the two. I wouldn't be surprised at all if it's Cook. More importantly, this defense has played better. Some signs of progress against Georgia that were really built upon against South Carolina in that win. So Missouri has the momentum, and Missouri should have a lot more to play for. So I think they have a good chance of winning this game on Saturday, and I think they got a better chance of winning this Saturday than their final regular season game against Arkansas. I really do.
Let's go to basketball. We'll wrap it up here. SLU lost to a very good, talented, extremely talented Memphis club this past week. And the one, though, that stings for any local college basketball fan, Mizzou against UMKC. And really, in that loss to them, you know, Ben, it wasn't even close. I mean, UMKC really dominated that game.
Yeah, beware the ruse, man. Look, everybody who listens to the podcast will accuse me of being a Konzo apologist, and I'll get that. I like Zo a lot. But here's the deal. The biggest, you know, feather in Konzo's cap has been how he's helped this program get past the really, really bad Kim Anderson stage. And Kim was a great guy, but it didn't work out on the court. Mizzou had become the least competitive basketball, Power 5 basketball team around. And the loss that kind of started that trend was a loss to UMKC when Kim Anderson was there. So when you're comparing those losses, this one was actually worse. It was a less competitive game against UMKC. So credit to the Ruse for showing up, but that can't happen. It's an inexcusable loss. So now we find out, is this the Missouri team that Konzo has built for year five, or is this a wake-up call, and are they going to start to build from this? If this is the team they have, then there's going to be some hard conversations had about the future of this program for sure. But here's the deal, Dan, because Konzo got such a deserved patient contract, it would be $6 million to buy him out because he's taken this team to a tournament, multiple tournaments in the past. So this transfer heavy experiment, it needs some time to breathe. You have to give it some patience to see if it can work this season, but all these guys are going to be back. So if they can't play well this year, then that's concerning about the future. Fair enough said. For SLU, I think the one thing that jumped out to me about the Memphis game, the really good team that Penny Hardaway has down there, here's the deal. They have to have somebody who can create points when they need to score against really talented defenses. And Javonte Perkins was that guy. Now he's not there. So who's going to be it? Who can do it? Can they? That's going to be the difference for them being a really respectable team versus a team that can get into the tournament and maybe do some damage. It's not surprising to see them struggle because they haven't been in that spot without Javonte before. But someone's going to need to rise to the occasion there and be that guy who can find a way to get a bucket when they need it against a good team.
My man, have a great Thanksgiving. Thanks for doing this as always. And we'll catch you up next Friday And hopefully you won't be too full to have a chance to visit with me.
You bet, man. Always always looking forward to it. And thanks to all of the listeners as well. I get great feedback on these, Dan. And I wanted to thank the listeners entering a busy holiday season. We'll keep them rolling, man.
Absolutely. That's Ben Fredrickson. I'm Danny Mac. And this is Scoops with Danny Mac.